Now it's time for Wayne Brittenden's Counterpoint. Visiting Danish politician Maria Krarup's very provocative remarks about Maori culture were widely reported earlier this month, and not just here but worldwide. Some Danish commentators have suggested that her statements, far from being a blunder, were aimed at underlining her party's anti-immigrant position at home, which, of course, was an astonishingly false parallel. This week, Wayne looks at the party of Krarup, the Danish People's Party, and the wider political landscape as the boundaries between left and right become, it seems, increasingly blurred.
Good morning, Chris. New Zealand reports of Marie Krarup's shabby comments describe the Danish People's Party simply as right-wing. If only Danish politics were that simple. In the latest opinion poll, her party's nudged to number two position of popularity behind the main conservative neoliberal opposition party, which paradoxically is called the Left Party. The ruling party, the Social Democrats, Denmark's once natural party of government, is in coalition with the further left People's Socialist Party. The Social Democrats, the architects of the welfare state, are at their lowest level of popularity since the 1880s. And it's not about a voter rejection of left-wing policies. This so-called leftist coalition has slashed student grants, unemployment benefits and pensions, and given hefty tax breaks to corporations and the wealthiest. Like the Labour government of the Roger Douglas era, Denmark's apparently left-wing government has gone far to the right of its conservative predecessor. At this moment, Danish teachers are locked out of their schools because they won't agree to the extended hours that the municipalities want to impose. And the present left-wing government's dictating terms deeply unfavourable to the teachers' union. And who's championing the teachers' position? The Danish communists, joined by, guess who? Marie Krarup's supposedly right-wing Danish People's Party. The Danish People's Party is the strongest voice against the neoliberal winds blowing through Denmark. Of course they support the work ethic, but they're all for strong public spending and welfare too, as long as the recipients aren't immigrants. And they don't much care for the rest of Europe either. All over the West, similar relatively new populist parties challenge the old political landscape, and they have a nasty whiff of xenophobia about them. The Labour or Social Democratic parties are rapidly losing their worker support base to these parties. A new generation of Social Democrats is largely without conviction or ideology. The party's often just a springboard to a lucrative post in Brussels or somewhere. With the mainstream left either reluctantly or enthusiastically adopting the same free market orthodoxy as the mainstream conservative parties, a form of national socialism is often the only sort of socialism on offer, certainly where there's no green left. It's happened in many countries. When France's National Front took hold of local government in Marseille, it re-established welfare provisions that the previous socialist administration had scrapped. The British National Party, always described as extreme right, has economic policies largely to the left of New Labour. Its extremism isn't in its economics, but rather in its ugly social attitudes. You'll see the same thing in Norway, Sweden, Holland, Austria, Switzerland, Germany, Poland, Hungary, Italy, Greece. With so little actual economic difference now between the old Conservative and Labour parties, it's no wonder that they prefer to define differences with identity politics, ideology-free single issues like gay marriage. The great clashes of vision between the Churchills and the Attlees, the Muldoons and the Kirks, are a thing of the past. It's not that ideology's dead, it's simply that between the main parties there's only one, the free market, and the debate's narrowed to who can manage it best, rather than whether we should have it at all. Good management's fine, but all management needs a guiding purpose, solid principles. How else can the voters make an informed choice? The rest of the democratic world's not far behind Denmark when it comes to the mercurial nature of contemporary politics. And ultimately, where will that leave democracy? To paraphrase Dostoevsky, where everything is permissible, nothing has meaning.
Thank you, Wayne. Now, on the line in London, I have Jesper Hansen, a Dane who's a teaching fellow at the Scandinavian Studies Department of University College there. And in Auckland, we have Mike Treen, National Director of Unite Union, and someone who's long researched and written about the shifting ideologies of political parties. Thank you both for coming on the programme. Jesper, can I start with you? Do you think that Maria Krarup actually knew the implications of what she was saying in New Zealand, as Wayne suggests, or was he surprised by all the criticism that that provoked?
I think that she's aware of what she's doing, and I think, as was hinted in the beginning of the program, I think it's all part of a domestic issue, and I think she wanted to showcase her politics internally in Denmark much more than thinking about the implications to New Zealand.
Yes, and she quite clearly didn't understand the nature of the game here compared to Denmark. I mean, there seems to be a world of difference.
Yeah, I think many Danes forget that everybody doesn't think like a Dane. In Denmark, people are very candid, and people often speak their minds in ways that are not acceptable abroad. And I think to her it was more important to communicate her domestic message than caring about feelings in New Zealand.
What does her party actually say they want? They're apparently against neoliberal economics. They want more a softer welfare approach, but so long as it's only to Danes, people who are identifiably Danes. Does it go any further than that?
I think one has to be a little bit careful with this party. They are quite complex, and in general, they feel that benefits have to go to the people who need them, and they don't normally have a racist approach per se. But that being said, they want benefits to go to people who think like Danes, who behave like Danes, and that leaves very little space for anybody who is an immigrant, who is a Muslim especially. And I think that is their core issue. And if you look at their politics from 2001 to 2011, before the new government, they worked together with the neoliberal government, and they focused on their single issues, which had to do with immigration and some welfare benefits. And they did accept the liberal economic politics. So I think that all in all, they're very good at focusing on their key issues, which is of course which is Denmark for people who think and act like Danes.
How much competition is there within the system, the political spectrum itself in Denmark, for that space?
I think that the competition has increased a lot. If you go back to the 90s, the then Prime Minister, Poul Nyrup Rasmussen, said that the party was not acceptable. People wouldn't even listen to their opinions. And that has changed. And I think one of the problems for the Social Democrats is that they have had to accept that their voters demanded a much stricter regulation of immigration laws. And that has been very hard for the true left wing of the party, the more ideological left, to accept. And I think that is a part of the crisis that the Social Democrats in Denmark are facing right now, how to make these two very different worlds meet.
You say that Danes tend to be quite honest and outspoken about things, and there is, I guess, something of a reputation that Danes have for that. A lot of people would say this is very good. Are there limits, are there conventions around political campaigning which place constraints on that, or has all that been stripped away?
I mean, obviously, there will always be limitations and ways of doing things. There's also a culture of speech in Denmark, of course, but there is in Denmark this feeling that freedom of speech is the core democratic right, and it's very much been championed as a right. I have the right to say whatever I want to say because the constitution gives me that right, and that has in some ways been taken to the extreme in Denmark. So instead of thinking about the implications of what you say and whether or not you might hurt somebody's feelings, you will assert your right to actually say it. I mean, recently another member of Krarup's party said in Parliament, this was about lesbian couples' right to adopt. She said, "What will be the next step? Marriage to animals, for instance." And that is being said in Parliament.
Yes.
So, I mean, in a way, everything goes. But I mean, obviously, there are limits.
Yes, I mean, I assume there are limits about identifying particular racial or ethnic minorities. I mean, it's all very well to talk about immigrants, but it's more dangerous territory when you start to pinpoint particular ethnic groups. I mean, has there been any of that in Denmark?
I think in general the party has been quite successful at sort of navigating this minefield. And because, of course, they know that they can't be outright racist, they can't target minorities, that's against the law. I'm not aware of any recent cases where they've actually been to court and have lost. So I don't think there have been any cases.
Uh-huh.
I'm not 100% sure, though. Yeah.
It's interesting that in a society like this, where there is a certain amount of blurring of and overlapping of party politics, is there a public debate? Is there a debate in the media and by civil society about the implications of that in Denmark?
Well, there is a debate about it, but what quite often happens is that when there's a debate, even within the media, they will quite often be termed the left wing, which has become sort of a negative word in the debate. It's sort of the left wing fanatics from the far left. They're trying to silence the debate, or they're trying to assert their opinions. And you know that the Danish media was a monopoly until not recently, but like 20, 30 years ago. And there is still this idea that the media is dominated by far left wing intellectuals. And that has made debate somewhat more difficult. And again, I mean, it always comes back to this: we have the right to say it. Within the constitution, within the rights given by law, we have the right to speak. And I think very much it comes back to that. And it does silence debate somewhat, I think, not totally, but it often becomes a very intellectual debate. And quite a lot of people who are interested in this party, the right wing party, they don't really care about this debate, I think.
Yeah. Fascinating stuff. Thank you for that. Mike Treen, is this really a blurring of ideologies, do you think?
I'm not sure that that's the case. What you have is the traditional parties of the right and the left merging. But then an element of polarisation on both the left and the right wings. And at the moment it appears that the right wing have a certain ascendancy across Europe as providing an alternative. When you have the merged consensus, neoliberal economic and social doctrine collapsing into the economic mess that Europe has become, then people will naturally seek alternatives to that. So the blurring of the middle open space on the left and right wings.
But it's interesting, isn't it, that for the last few decades there has been a stampede towards capturing the middle ground. Now we're seeing that middle ground stretched out, and that everyone is also, they want to occupy the middle ground, but they also want to have the opportunity, it seems, certainly in Denmark, to be able to occupy some of the extreme territory as well, having their cake and eating it.
Well, it's not just in Denmark.
No, I'm sure it isn't.
Yeah. In Greece there was a huge surge to the left of Syriza at the last election, but they also have a surge. There was a smaller but significant surge to the fascist right-wing parties getting representation in parliament in Greece. In France, you've got the National Front, the traditional far-right party, but in the more recent election, there was a new left coalition that got a significant vote, 10 or so percent of the vote. So I think that as the traditional parties are more and more seen as incapable of providing a solution to the crisis, that this process will actually accelerate. Unless European capitalism stabilises and full employment re-emerges, then I think there will be a polarisation and a clash for the future.
Is this something that you sense is likely to translate into this country's political landscape as well?
Well, it has in the past. It was certainly true that on a milder scale, I guess, but the New Zealand First political phenomena, which had started with a strong anti-immigration platform, but also harked back to the welfare state and protecting sort of ordinary people and against the establishment, had some of those same features. I think, thankfully, it didn't develop into a sort of vicious right-wing sort of political force. I don't know whether the New Zealand First decided to sort of pull back from that direction or not, but it didn't sort of develop into a far-right party in the same way that these ones have in Europe.
Yes.
But I think it certainly had that potential.
Yes, and we'll watch that space. Thank you. I've been talking to Jesper Hansen from University College in London and Mike Treen, National Director of Unite Union, someone who's researched and written about the shifting ideologies of political parties.